The chair calls the Education Finance Committee to order for Tuesday, April 1st. Welcome, everyone. We do have a quorum. Quorum is present. And with that, Representative Bennett, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes.
Minutes are moved. Representative Bennett, any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, we have five bills. I'm getting a little feedback. So the first bill on the agenda, we have Representative Igo with House File 1161. Representative Igo, welcome to the committee. The chair moves House File 1161 before the committee with the chair's intent to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill at a later date. Representative Igo, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Chair and members. I appreciate the time in committee and your attention to this important bill. House File 1161 is an important bill that supports our schools in greater Minnesota. Minnesota has a long history of supporting public education, but we've got a problem with a quarter of our school districts that are falling behind on the operating referendum program. To be fair, the operating referendum was supposed to be for extras, but we know these dollars are simply going to pay the bills. There are many reasons why voters vote no, but in northern Minnesota, the issue of seasonal property is one that strikes as unfair, at least to the people who live there. I understand that previous generations of legislatures decided that seasonal and recreational properties should pay into the state's commercial levy instead of voter-approved school operating levies, but this bill doesn't change that. This bill does not change how cabins are taxed. Instead, I'm going to bring the committee through what the bill does. The bill creates seasonal and recreational tax-based replacement aid, aimed at reducing the local tax effort required for voters to approve levies. The bill does not give school boards additional levy authority. As the voters, they must be asked and vote yes. The bill is especially impactful to school districts with a very substantial amount of seasonal, recreational, residential property, like districts like mine in northern Minnesota up on the range. The bill could reduce the tax efforts by as much as 50% in a district where the cabin market value represents a substantial portion of the total market value. Again, this bill does not change how our cabins are taxed in greater Minnesota. It helps our greater Minnesota school districts that don't have the same tax base as some of our districts down here in the metro. But with that, I have some testifiers with me today that can tell this story a lot better than I can, and I would like to hand it off to them.
Thank you for your presentation, Representative Igo. You have three testifiers. Two are remote, so if the first one, I have Aaron, is it real?
Right.
Riley, you're up. Mr. Riley, if you could take the testifier stand, say your name for the record, and begin your testimony, please. I would ask that you keep your testimony as close to 2 minutes as possible.
My name is Aaron Riley. Hello, Chair and members of the House Education Finance Committee. My name is Aaron Riley, and I'm a sixth grade teacher serving the Grand Rapids community in rural Minnesota. I'm here expressing my strong support for House File 1161. My district has faced significant financial challenges due to rising educational costs. The fact is that we have cut the equivalent of a small school district in the last 5 years. The fact is that tax revenue from cabin properties in Grand Rapids should stay in Grand Rapids for our students. This bill is a first step in doing that. Chronic underfunding has forced ISD 318 to make difficult budgetary decisions. These cuts have had lasting impacts on our students and staff, including staff reductions. 40.2 teachers and 32.3 support staff have been eliminated, increasing workloads and reducing the support available to students. 72.5 fewer adults making connections with students. We've had program cuts. Elective programs at both Grand Rapids and Big Fork High School have been reduced, limiting students' opportunities to explore diverse subjects, as well as the K-5 art program, affecting the development of creativity and expression in our youngest learners. We've had the elimination of language programs. High school German and middle school Spanish programs have been cut, depriving students of valuable language learning experiences. Maintenance and purchase reductions. Technology expenditures have been reduced, and the purchase of 10 buses has been delayed, impacting both learning resources and transportation safety. Unlike approximately 70% of Minnesota school districts, we do not have an operating levy to supplement its funding. This puts us at a financial disadvantage, and House File 1161 aims to address funding inequities, which would be particularly beneficial for districts like mine that include a significant amount of seasonal property. This bill, if passed, would reduce the tax burden on our citizens by 20%, which would help increase the likelihood of a levy passing next time. Our students deserve the same quality education as those from better funded areas. This bill can work to ensure that every child has access to the resources and supports they need to be successful. I urge you to listen to our voices and work to bridge the gap between our district and its affluent counterparts. All Minnesota students deserve the same chances. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Riley. And with that, we have two remote testifiers, Ms. Cleave from Lake Superior Public Schools and Mr. Gross. Which one's up? Cleave. And Ms. Cleave, if you're on.
Good afternoon, Chair.
Members of the committee. Did I get the name right?
Gina Clive.
Clive. Ms. Clive, if you would, Superintendent Clive, if you would state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
For sure. I'm Gina Clive, new superintendent for Lake Superior School District, a fourth generation resident of Lake County and a proud graduate of Two Harbors High School. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1161, a bill that could provide tax relief for year-round residents within our school district. Our district has a longstanding tradition of educational excellence, Silver Bay to Two Harbors. We serve a vast geographic area spanning approximately 2,500 square miles and 82% made up of public land, including a portion of St. Louis County. From the shores of Lake Superior to the southern end of Bassett Township, all of Lake County extending to the Canadian border. Additionally, our region is the beloved destination for many Minnesotans whose fondest memories are tied to their cabins and their vacation homes. However, our district faces a unique financial challenge due to the high percentage of Class 4C 12 seasonal recreational properties. These properties are excluded from the referendum market value base and do not contribute to voter-approved operating referendum. As a result, the financial burden of supporting our schools falls disproportionately on our year-round residents, making it increasingly difficult to pass a much-needed operating levy. Between fiscal years 24 and 25, we're facing approximately $700,000 in budget cuts, reductions that are directly impacting staffing, class size, student opportunities, very similarly to how the testifier from Grand Rapids was speaking. Our last attempt at passing an operating levy was in 2007 with a request of $600 per pupil. At approximately 1,200 students, that levy would generate $720,000. However, 61% of our voters rejected it back in 07. Now, 18 years later, House File 1161 presents a chance to change that conversation. If we were to maintain that same $600 per pupil request, this legislation's proposed 31.4% reduction in voter-approved operating referendum tax rate through the seasonal tax-based replacement aid would account for about $226,000 of that $720,000 total. That reduction would be a game changer, transforming how our voters perceive school funding and making passage of an operating levy far more feasible. So by addressing the challenges faced by districts with high seasonal property ownership, this legislation ensures that all students have access to the resources they need to succeed, putting this decision in the hands of our voters while ensuring fairness in the tax structure is the right approach. We need this bill and your support to make it happen. If we can pass an operating levy, we can proactively invest in our students, retain our dedicated staff, and prevent further budget cuts without harm to educational opportunities. Please support House File 1161 and give us our opportunity to present to the voters an even more solid reason to say yes to the future of students in our district. Thank you, Chair and Representative Igo, committee members, for your time and consideration.
And thank you, Ms. Clive, for your testimony. Superintendent Gross?
Yes.
You're up. If you'd state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Gross, and I serve as the superintendent of Grand Rapids Area Schools in northern Minnesota. And I'm here as well to express strong support for House File 1161. I also want to just thank the members of the committee for your interest and support of education and your willingness to serve on a committee like this. I know that it's been difficult to balance all the needs that we have. Representative Igo did a really good job talking about the impact of operating referendums in Minnesota, and they have become a staple of our funding system, where it used to be something that districts had to pass in order to have things, the extras. Now it is a staple of our funding system, and there's evidence of that where 70% of our school districts have an operating referendum, the average of which is over $1,000 per pupil. So if you are a district with an operating referendum, that's making up 12% of your per pupil funding, leaving districts like ours and Lake Superior's here without that 12%. The Grand Rapids Area School District attempted an operating referendum in 2023 so we could stop cutting budget and jobs. Mr. Riley laid out a number of the reductions and tough choices we've had to make. But despite our community's commitment to education, that referendum was defeated by a 3-1 margin. And much of what I heard was, we know you need this, but we just can't afford this right now. And when you take a closer look at the situation for districts like ours, especially those in northeastern Minnesota, it's not hard to understand why our taxpayers feel this way. Our district, like Lake Superior, has a significant amount of seasonal recreational property. And as was mentioned by my colleague, those properties do not contribute to operating referendums, which puts a disproportionate burden on our residents. They were excluded years ago from referendum market value, and this bill would fix that, ensuring that all people benefiting from the resources and services in our communities contribute to our schools. And that's something we heard out on our campaign trail was our residents saying, you know, my neighbors don't support schools. They don't pay into schools, and we think they should. The bill would take care of that. Second, as my colleague mentioned, we're in an area of the state where a large percentage of our lands are public. In our case, in Itasca County, over 40%. And again, that means that any tax increase is distributed on a smaller percentage of land, disproportionately affecting our residents. Some of you are familiar with payments in lieu of taxes, and that's a program that exists to help offset that, but that doesn't help school districts the same way that it helps counties, and it certainly doesn't help us with operating referendums. To put this challenge in perspective, in 2023, like I mentioned, when we ran our operating referendum, a metro school district ran an operating referendum that would have raised the same dollar amount per pupil as us. But in our community, our taxpayers would have had to pay almost double what taxpayers in the metro district were being asked to pay for the same amount of revenue per student just because of tax base. The result of inequities like these are severe, again, Mr. Riley mentioned that 6 years straight of cuts. It's been my entire experience in my job in Grand Rapids Area Schools of cutting every single spring. And that's not a sustainable or a way to build a high-functioning and successful school district. These inequities show up loudly when you look at maps of where districts are that have operating referendums.
Every single school, if you could wrap it up. I'm sorry.
Last paragraph. Every single school district without an operating referendum in Minnesota is more than 30 miles from where the committee is meeting today. And a disproportion of those are in northeastern Minnesota. Rural students deserve the same opportunities under our current system. They don't. And I'd urge you to consider changing that system. This bill isn't a handout. Our communities still have to step up to say yes. And it just gives them a fair chance to do that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Gross. And if you want to just stay online as we go through questions. I see we have with us Mr. Swanson. Mr. Strom has done a substitution. If you could just walk us quickly through the fiscal note, and then we'll go back to member questions and closing comments. Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Beckel. I just wanted to recognize you, Mr. Swanson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. So House File 1161 has a fiscal note. If you'll turn to page 2, we'll look at a little bit more of the detail. It has the same numbers as page 1, but I'll just go over the table at the top of the page. So this bill has a state general fund cost of $8.196 million in fiscal year 27, and then a cost of $18.476 million in fiscal years 28 and 29. Below the table, the department that filled out the fiscal note, I believe. Yep, the education department. Okay, just making sure. Provided a short bill description, just explaining what the seasonal tax base replacement aid is and then what it does. Fairly elaborate. I can go into more detail about what it is, but I think the author and the testifiers did a good job. And then the education department goes into the assumptions about this bill. So it explains that it will be the seasonal tax base adjustment factor that is in section 2 of the bill will be applied to the referendum levy amount for the fiscal years 25 for 27 and then through 29. The taxable property classification in the bill is 4C paragraph 12 in 273.13. And if you actually go to that in statute, that's just real and personal property devoted to non-commercial, temporary, and seasonal residential occupancy for resident recreation purposes. And then it provides some more explanation about the cost. So it says, besides just calculating the state aid difference of what the state would pay instead of what these eligible communities would pay in levy, they say that they would have minute costs of about $14,000 because they would have to recode their gen ed and levy program areas in their IT systems. Then if you turn to page 3, this whole thing is just explaining their minute costs, so you can look at that in more detail. And then page 4 provides the actual detail of what the difference would be if you calculated the seasonal tax base replacement aid with the difference between what their referendum levy is now and with that additional aid tacked on to the referendum equalization aid, basically. So you see the entitlement at the top of this chart, and of course then that needs to be shifted as all the state aids do in the education area. So that's shifted by 90% in the current year payment and then 10% of the cleanup payment. And then you can see the total appropriations at the bottom with the shifted numbers plus that minute, roughly $14,000 to get to the total cost of the bill. That is the fiscal note.
Thank you, members. We have time for a question or two before we go to closing comments. With that, Representative Igo, closing comments to your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll take the questions as everyone understands how good of a bill it is. So I want to thank some of the authors on this bill, too. You, Chair Kreischer, for being on this bill, as long as Representative Verning, Representative Rehrauer, for being a part of this bill and helping me with this. I really do appreciate it. I think just in closing comments, I'll say that everyone loves northern Minnesota. Everyone loves cabin country. But to people like me and the people I represent, that's home. And this bill today is going to help us take care of our home and take care of our students just a little bit better. So thank you for the committee's support and time today.
Thank you, Representative Igo. The chair lays over House File 1161 for possible inclusion and further discussion at a later date or omnibus bill. Appreciate it. Representative Myers, you're up with your House File 2201. And members, the chair will go ahead and move House File 2201 before the committee with the chair's intent to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further consideration. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Looks like we have 6 testifiers and 1 testifier who submitted their testimony. So with that, Representative Myers, if you could open with your bill, and then we'll move to the testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, here today to talk about House File 2201. And I just want to give a little background before I get too in-depth into this. But, you know, for the past 10 years, I've served on my local food shelf, being a food shelf volunteer. I've either worked Saturday mornings consistently with my kids, as of recently with, you know, my public service down here, I do a Friday morning food rescue. So I drop the kids off at school and I go to the local Cub Foods and, you know, pick up that food that they donate every year or every day, every Friday. You know, so I know how important it is to make an impact in our local communities, even in my local community, how important it is and how food insecurity is something that impacts a lot of people. I've also, you know, stepped up my, you know, game and become a board member over there. And I think from my job as a legislator here, I have also co-authored several bills last year and this year, passing food insecurity bills. I just had a bill heard in Child and Family for food insecurity as well. So it's something that I'm really trying to focus on. But, you know, as a father of four kids that go to public school, my sister's a teacher, I've really started to learn a lot by listening to my teachers, superintendents, you know, trying to be a good dad to do what I can to support, you know, educational outcomes for my kids as well as everybody else's kids that go to these schools. I think we've kind of seen the budget cuts, you know, QCOMP being cut. We've seen special education being cut, transportation being cut, things that we know are going to impact our schools, and it's impacting every single school. I don't think there's probably a school that isn't impacted. And what's that mean? That means less teachers. That means larger classroom sizes, less resources, more electives or less electives for our kids. So the bill I have in front of you here is something that I've worked on with quite a few superintendents, a lot of teachers, a lot of parents. And what it does is it maintains free breakfast for everybody. So as you're, you know, you drop your kid off in the morning, they're still going to have the option for that free breakfast. But what it does, it requires anybody over $150,000 income, they've got to provide those lunches. The bill then takes it one step further and takes that savings and puts it back into our schools on an LOR. I believe there was some information provided by nonpartisan staff, but that's about $85 million a year or $170 million over the biennium. You know, when you listen to parents, you hear a lot of them say, I'm frustrated because I can pay for my meal, but what I can't do is give the school more money to hire more teachers. I can't give the school money to address larger classroom sizes. I can't give them more money to provide more electives and resources for, you know, the future of our kids. You know, when you talk to teachers, you see the budget shortfalls, you see the cut to pay, you see the food waste going on, you see the lack of resources, you see sometimes these teachers having to step up and buy things for their own classrooms. You know, for administrators, I mean, they're having to let teachers go. They're having to have those conversations with parents. Why are my class sizes so large? And some schools are even going so far as cutting class days so that our kids are in school a shorter amount of time. What I tried to do here is bring a pragmatic approach to, you know, school meals, while also trying to bring that balance and focus on funding our schools. And I hope we can have a good discussion here, and I know we have several testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Meyer, for that opening comment. Mr. Peckle from Rochester and Mr. Olson from Minnetonka, if you could both come up. And Mr. Peckle, I'll have you, I hope I pronounced that right. Is it Peckle or Peckle?
Mr. Chair, it's either Peckle or Peckle. My grandparents pronounced it two ways, so I answer to both.
Which one would you like?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Kent Peckle, and I'm honored to serve as superintendent in Rochester. My testimony today reflects my views as the leader of an extraordinarily diverse school system that
and
serves
if you could,
thousands
one second. And
of students.
Just remind the testifiers, I do want to keep you all within about 2 minutes, so if you get that nasty cutoff, that's just me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My testimony today reflects my views as the leader of an extraordinarily diverse school district that serves thousands of students who would and thousands of students who would not qualify for free school lunches under House File 2201 if it's approved. While I am not able to endorse House File 2201 at this time, I can envision doing so if federal funding for school meals is significantly reduced or if state budget constraints threaten core academic programs and services. Providing all students with free breakfast and lunch is a fantastic and appropriate investment in our kids if adequate funding is available to support the core educational mission of our schools and districts. In Rochester, we've seen the percentage of our students who eat school meals grow by approximately 11% since the new state policy went into effect in the fall of 2023. Today, however, it appears that you may need to make a very difficult choice at the end of the current legislative session: subsidizing meals for families who can afford them, or preserving teachers, counselors, and academic programs critical to student learning. As you know, school districts from across Minnesota, large and small, urban, rural, and suburban, are planning major cuts for the upcoming school year in positions and programs that directly support the academic development of our students in reading, math, and other subjects. It probably won't surprise any of you on the committee that I was hesitant to agree to testify on this bill given its political sensitivity. I try to do my job as superintendent in Rochester in the most apolitical way possible. The district that I lead is represented by both DFL and Republican legislators, and I've worked well with all of them since I got to Rochester a little less than 4 years ago. It's in that spirit that I ask you to work together to balance the needs of our students in the lunchroom with the needs of our students in the classroom as you make the difficult decisions that lie ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Olson?
My name is Dan Olson, and I'm in my second year serving as treasurer on the Minnetonka School Board. Chairs and members of the committee, as you're likely well aware, districts statewide are facing nearly $300 million in budget deficits, including Minnetonka. This comes on top of the fact that we receive significantly less aid per pupil than the average district, which requires us to ask our community for support. At the same time, our nutrition services budget is healthy due to state funding breakfast and lunch for all children, but we lack the flexibility to use those funds to address our operating budget shortfall. House File 2201 partially resolves this discrepancy by establishing a high ceiling under which families qualify for free lunch, something like $150,000 for a family of four. This lives up to the spirit of the historic legislation the governor and DFL majority passed in 2023, ensuring that no child will go hungry, while also recognizing that many families have the means to bear the modest expense of school meals. This would result in significant savings for the state, which this bill redirects to the classroom via a third tier of local optional revenue. At a time when our district has cut nearly 90 teacher and paraprofessional staff, this is a necessary boost to education funding. By allowing local school boards to directly levy their constituents for a third tier of local optional revenue, even districts whose voters would not approve an operating levy can raise funds for critical district operations. I sincerely believe that kids can't learn well if they're hungry, but laying off dozens of teachers and paras hurts kids as well. Should you choose to adopt this measure, all I ask is that you do not burden families and districts with the responsibility of identifying who qualifies, but rely on information you already possess in the form of Minnesota tax returns. I personally identify as a progressive DFLer, but I believe the work y'all do and the work we do as a school board is rooted in compromise. I see House File 2201 as a patently reasonable compromise that lives up to the spirit of free school meals for kids, while also freeing up state resources to benefit those same kids in the classroom. Thank you.
And if I could have, just the chair's prerogative a second before we go on to the next one, I heard a couple of comments. I want to tell you why I decided to hear this bill, and it has nothing to do with political sides. Members, we're a finance committee, and dollars don't have a political affiliation. The most illogical use of a dollar is the one you can't use for students. And so we've had these conversations about dollars getting locked in, school districts not being able to access those because of the federal rules around nutrition or that. Members, I hope, and I hear both of you, but I hope the takeaway is not that this is a political fight. This is a finance debate on how we get access to dollars that may be on the table that you can't touch. That's all this is with my intent on that. And so I wanted to be clear about that. I hope that's not the feeling, because that is not at all what this committee is about. So I hope that helps quell a little bit of concerns you may have. These dollars are out there, and if we can use them, great. If we can't, we should have reasons why, and we should be able to talk about those. So with that, Mr. Shaver and Ms. Gardner. Oh, and I can bring them back up. You want to do questions now?
Before the next testifier.
Sure. And if I, if I could have the two testifiers come back for 1 second, I'm going to allow Chair Joachim as well a couple of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would have asked a question, too, if I had the gavel today.
It's actually for the board member from Minnetonka. First, thank you for being a board member. I know it can be a thankless job. And I understand districts are struggling right now. We only filled about a third of the hole with all the work we did last year with the $2.2 billion above base. I know since we started our work in 2023-24, I think we're about $500 more per pupil than you would have been. And now with indexing, I hope that helps. But one question for Minnetonka. We border each other, and I heard you say you get less aid from the state. What is your open enrollment percentage?
Approximately 35 to 40%.
Sorry, Mr. Olson?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Approximately 35 to 40%.
Chair Yoakim?
Thank you. I have one quick question for Mr. Strom, and then we'll move on. I know we have a full agenda.
Mr. Strom?
Remind me again. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Remind me again, Mr. Strom, when somebody open enrolls, what funding follows them to that school district and what stays behind with the school district where the student came from?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Chair Yoakim. On the referendum, for example, the open enrollment moves the revenue on the student serve basis. So Minnetonka counts those students that are coming into their district, but in terms of the levy for that, that levy spread across the taxpayers of the Minnetonka School District only. So for open enrollment students, the general education revenue, including referendum, is calculated at the school that the student is attending, and for between district open enrollment, then the levy share is borne by the Minnetonka district in this case.
Chair Yoakim, good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Strom. If I can remember right, too, then they can't levy for the student coming in. They can only levy this for the students that are in the district. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Yoakim, they count in the pupil count for determining the dollars of referendum each resident student that they are serving and each open enrolled student coming in. So they are counting students from neighboring districts who open enroll into the district. But the tax levy associated with the referendum is paid entirely by the Minnetonka taxpayers.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. I did remember that, you know, open enrolling, you just don't get as much for those students as you do for your own students. So thank you.
And with that, thank you to both testifiers, Mr. Shaver and Ms. Gardner. Mr. Shaver, if you know the drill, state your name for the record and begin.
Chair Cresha, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver. I'm the Senior Policy Director at Ed Allies. We're advocates for kids. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in opposition to House File 2201 this afternoon. Minnesota's compulsory attendance law requires all children in the state to attend school from age 7 to 17. Two other areas of state law compelling an individual to physically be somewhere: if you commit a crime, prison, or if you manage enough votes, this fine institution. So if you're required by state law to be somewhere for a significant period of time, it follows that the state ought to make sure some basic needs are met. Look at this place. The taxpayers rightly provided our elected officials a place to be with electricity, chairs, desks, bathrooms, a roof, and an option to take a per diem to pay for stuff like meals. This same standard should be applied to children who live in this state and the schools they are required to attend. If you ever tried to have a heart-to-heart conversation with a hungry sixth grader or a hungry legislator, you'll get why it's a worthy investment of the taxpayer to make sure all of our elected officials and all of our children have access to something to eat in the place they've got to be all day. That's what Universal Meals does. House File 2201 proposes to repeal Universal Meals and reestablish a lunchroom of haves and have-nots by setting an arbitrary financial line. This would also be harmful to the pocketbooks of parents by creating a new government fee for school meals to generate $85 million in new revenue from public school families. Of course, there are families that can afford to pay for their kids' lunches at schools. They can still pay for a la carte meals. They can write a check to their district's foundation. These same families could afford state-mandated fees on desks, air conditioning, drinking fountains, gym equipment, to ride the school bus, or even to tip their kids' teacher at the end of each week. There are probably more efficient ways to pay for things we want schools to be able to do instead of one fee at a time, like House File 2201 proposes. The Universal Meal Law ensures that no student in Minnesota schools has to go hungry. That's a standard to take pride in, not a road, one we encourage the legislature to maintain by rejecting this proposal. Thank you for your time and for your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. And Ms. Gardner, state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Leah Gardner. I am with the food group and also representing the Hunger Free Schools Coalition, which is a diverse group of business and healthcare leaders, nonprofit and advocacy groups, education and youth partners, all dedicated to ensuring access to school meals for every student in Minnesota. Our work on school meals policy began by having to clarify in law multiple times the exact definition of lunch shaming, because not so long ago we had schools dumping meals in front of kids with a negative meal balance. They were being sent to the principal's office with a cheese sandwich. They were getting their hands stamped and more. I know we think we've come a long way since those days, and I hope we have, but I'm here to tell you that anytime we draw a line between the haves and the have-nots in school, there will be stigma. Our young people are smarter than we often give them credit for. I have had multiple young people tell me about their experiences prior to Universal Meals passing. In fact, I had one student, Audrey from Moundsview, who was hoping to be able to testify remotely today, but since she wasn't given that opportunity, I just want to reiterate that her main concern was around stigma from a time when her family was struggling and now worrying about her peers in that same situation. By middle school and high school, students know how much money is in their account, and many fear being told that they have a negative balance. I had another young person tell me about how we would pretend not to be hungry so his parents didn't have to have that bill when the money was due. Our young people deserve better. As the adults, the decisions we make will set the tone in our school cafeterias. I implore you to stay the course, and just like no one asks kids to pay for their books or buses, let's make sure kids can get a meal at school, no stress, no questions asked. I briefly want to share also that I do understand the financial pressures our schools are facing. In fact, I serve as treasurer on the school board of the third largest district in our state, and I know we must be very thoughtful about the choices we make with our long-term budget in mind. But in my district, we are guided by our values and with the well-being of our students at the center of our decision-making. We will not pit our students against our teachers or anyone else. We will feed our students because it's the right thing to do. We will also make sure our teachers have competitive compensation and benefits. And through careful budgeting, we can afford to do both. What we can't afford is the stigma that comes with putting an income limit on food and the paperwork strain that would put on our schools to have to process a massive increase in the number of school meal applications. Thank you for your time.
And thank you for the testimony. With that, Ms. Smith and Ms. Schneider, Caitlin Schneider, if you'd come up. And I apologize, it was my call on the remote testifier that came in after the time, and I was not able to accommodate with just the way the timing works. So sometimes the clock is not our friend. Ms. Smith, if you begin your testimony, and then Caitlin Schneider from Education Minnesota afterwards. So, Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lori Smith, and I'm a cook in St. Cloud and a trustee on the executive board of SEIU 284. The state of Minnesota made sure that every student has access to nutritious meals at school, regardless of their parents' income or ability to pay. That made a huge difference. I know the kids who come through my lunch line. I can always tell who doesn't get enough to eat at home. Even though I'm not supposed to, I slip them a little bit extra. I would invite anyone to come and stand in the lunch line and tell me which one of the kids that I serve don't deserve that lunch. Nutrition is one of the most important factors for student growth and academic success. Children behave and learn better when they're well nourished. Free meals are a good investment in our future. Before Universal Meals, there were always kids who said they weren't hungry and they'd just go sit down with nothing. They were hungry, you can tell. Their parents just didn't give them the money they wanted, and they didn't want to be embarrassed. Now, everyone just comes through the line. We offer kids five options. We offer them a grain, we offer them a protein, a fruit, a vegetable, and a milk. The kids can take all five, but only are required to take three. We call it offer versus serve. If I see a kid come through the line with only two items, I'll say, you got to go get a third thing. Maybe you can get a bag of craisins or something, and you can put it on the table and use that as a snack. Then I can scan their tag. to charge them for that meal. Before universal meals, it was food service workers who were asked to enforce district meal debt policy. No one does this job to take food away from kids. One of the secretaries in St. Cloud told me that before lunch shaming, she would have to call parents and tell them that their kids could not walk commencements at graduation because they had a negative lunch account. So what is the point of that they're working so hard? With universal meals, we can focus on what we love. We can feed the kids and we can give them a bright future. I want to thank you for the work that you do to ensure that kids get the nutrition they need to learn, grow, and thrive. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
And thank you, Ms. Smith. And if Mr. Ooney, if you'd come up and take her place, while Caitlin Snyder from Education Minnesota, you know the drill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Caitlin Snyder, and I'm here today representing Education Minnesota, a union of 84,000 educators. First, I want to thank Representative Myers for his ongoing dialogue with educators in his district. When Minnetonka or Wayzata educators are at the Capitol or when they're facing budget cuts, I know Representative Myers will hear from our members directly. And I believe this is a sincere attempt to prevent layoffs and other disruptions coming to education. That being said, Education Minnesota firmly believes in feeding all students. Family incomes move up and down for a variety of reasons. One's income on April 15th might have nothing to do with your reality come the next school year. Educators have also learned from experience that parents with high incomes can still forget to pack a lunch or to pay their bills. A hungry child is a hungry child, no matter their zip code. Educators frequently say student learning conditions are educator working conditions. We can't help educators by harming our students. Educators enter the field because they care about their community and children. We will not be pit against our students. Hungry kids are less focused, require more attention, and create more disturbances in classes. That hurts everyone in the classroom with the hungry student, including the teacher. The teacher is now spending time redirecting while 30 other kids sit and wait, and perhaps not the most patient waiters, the other kids in the classroom. Some may be upset that I'm not throwing school lunches or any other needed education funding out in a trade for the pensions we need. But no other pension fund is asked to do this. Law enforcement has a proposal to improve their pensions this year, and no one is asking that to be funded by cutting first responders or public defenders or other necessary parts of our public safety teams. I'm grateful to be here today in front of a House that set targets that will maintain needed services to our students and can include needed pension reform for career teachers. This shows that we can do both, fund our students, and improve benefits for our educators. Imagine what we could do if we had the courage to raise revenue this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ooney.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Ooney. I am the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education and appreciate the opportunity to provide some comments and concerns on HF 2201. I want to first thank Representative Myers for the conversation yesterday and to share some of the intent with the bill, which obviously he shared with the committee earlier. During the pandemic, the federal government provided additional reimbursements to allow schools to provide meals at no cost for the 2021 and 21-22 school years. In 23, the legislature and Governor Walz passed free school meals, which provided a free breakfast and lunch for all students, no matter their family's income level. This has resulted in a significant increase in the number of students participating in school meals. 150 meals were served last year and almost 100 million meals this school year through January. Making sure that all students are fed in schools is a fundamental component to supporting the whole child and ensuring their academic, behavioral, and social-emotional success. Research shows that a well-nourished child is a better learner, test taker, and participant in school. Providing free school meals for all also ensures access to nutritious meals to all students as a key educational and health support, eliminates the tiered eligibility system that limits participation for too many children whose families are struggling to make ends meet or who fluctuate on those income levels that is hard to track over a year basis. Reduces stigma and lunch shaming associated with participating in school meals. Eliminates school meals debt and significantly reduces the administrative work required to operate the school nutrition programs and improving school nutrition finances. Our position has been that creating another means-tested approach to free meals by reintroducing income eligibility creates additional costs for participants, such as modification to systems and training for staff to implement the income thresholds and screening for income eligibility. A new income bracket on the forms would create a new dynamic that participants would not have implemented before. Participants also need to work with their forms vendors to create this new threshold. This would also create costs for unpaid meal debt collection for the LEA participants. Roughly, adding this income threshold could leave out up to 130,000 students per lunch. For all these reasons, MDE has strong concerns with moving away from free school meals for all as proposed in HF 2201 and strongly encourages the committee to retain the program as is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ernie. And with that, members, we do have a couple of amendments that we'll have some discussions on. So I'm going to move to those. And members, I just would remind the committee the position we're in right now is the same position our school boards and superintendents are in every single day. The dollars come to you, and you have to decide where they go. And so with that, members, we're having discussions about that. It's a spreadsheet. It's a budget for this committee. I will offer the A1 amendment, Representative Myers. So I offer the A1 amendment that would apply the potential savings to these school lunch accounts, to the surpluses, to the teacher pension account. We hear these, and these are responses to the same conversations and emails I'm assuming we're all getting. Representative Nadeau currently has a consideration that would be a 60-30 pension plan for teacher. I'm sorry. 62-30. Read that wrong. This plan would give teachers with 30 years of service the ability to retire at the age of 62 with full benefits. It has a cost of $75 million. As a former teacher myself, I understand this, and I also understand how people are looking for certainty later in life. I also understand there's dollars out there and they're moving around through the state budget. So this is one potential conversation to get at that. And I just wanted to offer it up for member conversations and as a possibility. Representative Myers, response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm pretty tied to what I'm trying to do for our schools. But what I do like, though, is that we're having the conversation about options and opportunities. We have to have that conversation. We can't, and it's going to be on you guys, but we can't sit idly by and let education funding go the way it is right now. We have to do something. You know, I can see with that amendment, you know, Representative Nadeau has a really good option for teachers to move it in the right direction. You know, that amount would cover it. But again, you know, this is going to be something that, you know, this committee is going to have to talk about.
Thank you. Members, discussion to the A1 amendment. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad that you mentioned targets. I'm glad that we're having this discussion because we will end up making some tough decisions. I don't think we need to make it in the lunchroom with our children. We see all the statistics that tell us how free meals make a difference in academic rigor. But with this amendment, we do have targets. We have $40 million in the first biennium. We have a zero in the second biennium. And there's also a pensions target. So I was curious to see this bill still come forward after the targets came up. Traditionally, we do not fund pensions within the education K-12 budget. So I don't think that'd be a great place to start. And with that, I would just say that about this amendment.
And thank you for that. Chair Joaquin, if there's no other, so members, again, thank you for the discussion of this. I will be withdrawing this. It's a reminder for us to look at the priorities in front of us. When we talk about this, and again, going forward, again, these lunch accounts will have surpluses. Those dollars sitting there are not feeding kids. They're dollars sitting in surpluses. And this committee, whether it's this biennium, next biennium, where we'll be wrestling with how to move those dollars in and out and the constraints on those. I've heard from many on the pensions, and I understand traditionally we may not have done things, but if we did things traditionally the way we've always done them, that's why we have compensatory where it is. We are going to have to, in my opinion, look at new ideas, new ways of moving things around, and try to be as efficient as we can with the resources we have. So with that, to your great chagrin, I will withdraw the A1 amendment. You can give me the aw. And I'll offer the A2 amendment. So the A2 amendment is just another conversation and trying to unlock to this surplus dollars and getting us a little bit clarity on that. And I would ask Mr. Strom if you could just take a moment to talk about this amendment and my purpose of trying to get those $250 out and to use it in other ways.
Mr. Chair, members, the A2 amendment is in your packet, and it allows two things to happen. Let me maybe describe it outside of the amendment first. The state of Minnesota, in addition to providing for the formerly the parent share of the universal meals, also pays 12.5 cents for every meal served to help school food services provide the meals that they're providing. This amendment moves that 12.5 cents to a separate out of the school meals account, out of the fund two, out of the school lunch account, and into the general fund, putting that money, same amount of money per district, in a general fund account that can be used for any school purpose, any school meal purpose at all. The second thing it creates as a funding mechanism is it allows a school district to essentially voluntarily surrender a payment of aid from the state for school meals and receive that same amount of money also in the general fund as well. So the goal of those two funding provisions is to shift from the school nutrition fund to the general fund money. And once that money is in the general fund, to still require that money to be used for any food service purpose. But as this committee has heard with other proposals this year, there are some limitations that are federally set on how school, the reserve, how the accounts, how the money can be used in the nutrition fund, and also how the fund balance, if there's a fund balance in that account, can be used. So the goal of switching those two funding sources is to put them for a broader array of school meals purposes in the general fund instead of leaving them in the food service fund. And Mr. Chair, there's one final change in that amendment as well, and that essentially is allowing the well, this money goes into a reserved account, essentially says that the money can be used only for the operating facilities or maintenance purposes related to the school district's food service program. So if there were electrical upgrades needed or a roof needed to be fixed or any of those kinds of things, it could be used for that purpose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I go to your comments, Representative Meyer, so again, what we've heard in this committee from many schools and what we've tried to listen to as a committee is the funding flexibility. Schools have asked for that ability to move funds around. This is no different than what has been consistently brought forward. And so this is an amendment offering to have that same flexibility and to try to unlock dollars. Remember, we're unlocking dollars that are left where schools and superintendents cannot touch them. As they're making the difficult choices they are, they're looking in their UFAR system and they're looking in their funding at dollars they cannot touch. That's what the intent of this is, to try to get to that, try to find some mechanisms. Like I said, if this doesn't, and I don't expect it to be solved today, but if it doesn't get solved this biennium, it will be looked at over and over and over again. Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Again, you know, something about this amendment that I do like is that flexibility. I mean, it's the number one thing I heard from my districts, my teachers. You know, they're not looking for a state-run school board. We have school boards in our local communities that can make those decisions. And schools in Onamia are very different than schools in Minnetonka. So providing that flexibility is really important.
Members, a quick discussion of the amendment. Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad you're talking about flexibility in the food accounts. We've been talking about that a lot. That 12.5 cents above is about $13 million a year. And something we definitely should be discussing, since we're already paying it and we have it go into the general fund with some flexibility, and even flexibility within the state accounts that are allowed by law, because we are tied to federal dollars. We can do that without taking food away from kids.
And thank you, Chair Joaquin. And again, I understand the point. I would say, I would contend that my proposal is just removing the surplus dollars. However, we want to look at that. But those surplus dollars exist, and they are not feeding anybody. They are a surplus. Understand how we may differ on that. Representative Myers, Representative Bakeberg, and then I'll go to close. Then I'll withdraw the amendment. I'll even make you happy there, and we'll come back to close. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers, for really thinking creatively
in the underlying bill, and we'll talk about the amendment. I just want to be very, very clear to every single person listening right now. Okay, right now, well, not right now, about 2 hours ago, in schools across Minnesota, kids walked into the lunchroom, and they had lunch. 5 years ago, kids walked into the lunchroom and got lunch. There are not schools taking food away from kids. We need to be very clear about that. Okay, Representative Myers has a bill to think creatively about how do we unlock some of the funds that are tied up in restricted accounts in a bucket that Superintendent Pikel can't move from one bucket to the other. We literally had a superintendent come and testify that the funds are so locked up that he can buy a lunch table, which is great, but he can't fix the roof leaking onto that lunch table. Think about that. Okay, so let's come together, let's solve the problems, but we need to move away from this rhetoric that kids are, that schools are taking food away from kids. That is not happening. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Representative Myers, closing to your bill. Oh, I'm sorry, I have a list of, oh, I should withdraw the amendment. Thank you. So with that, Chair Kreischer withdraws the A2 amendment. And members, discussion to this bill before we go to close. I have a list. Is that the correct list? Representative Ream, I'm not used to offering amendments from the chair. Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Myers, for giving us an opportunity to discuss school meals. I know I represent Chanhassen, as you know, and in my district, some of my constituents are part of the Minnetonka School District, and I did a lot of door knocking, like you did, and I would go to the doors and I would talk to people about, you know, what do you know about what we did last session? And oftentimes people would say, school meals, you guys passed free school meals, and we love that. Oftentimes it's the dads who would say, we love the free school meals. So it was incredibly popular. And I am very concerned about this bill because I know at a time when our economy is in flux, you know, we don't know what's happening. The stock market is not doing very well. I'm hearing that there's like a 33% chance that we're going to be in a recession in a year. You know, people are hurting. I am very concerned about us taking away something like school meals. I think our families, you know, that's the last thing they need to worry about is whether or not their kid is going to get a meal at school. I think we did great work last year. We funded our schools. You know, we weren't able to fully fund them because we had 20 years that we weren't able to, you know, make up for and the two-year biennium that we worked on. But I will say, you know, we did amazing work, I think, in increasing the amount of per pupil aid and in passing bills like free school lunches. I would not want to go back. I don't think this is a place where we should make any cuts. I have talked to the food shelves in my area, and they are seeing a huge increase in people coming to the food shelves, more so than during COVID, which I was surprised by. But they said that they don't have enough space in their facility to hold all the food, and they have so many people coming. They need to build bigger spaces for their food shelf. I just think this is the wrong answer at the wrong time. I'm all for looking at our budget and seeing where we could maybe make some adjustments, but I don't think we should make any changes to this other than I do think there are some surpluses in the school, nutritional aid at some of the schools, but I think that's something that we need to not mess around with right now when we are not sure what is going to come our way. Given the Trump-Musk administration, you know, making all these cuts. So I would say I like the idea of being really frugal, and I think our schools have been really frugal, and some of them have told me that they are able to make bulk purchases of food and then make, you know, from-scratch meals, which I think has been great, and I want them to continue that. But I do not want to see kids feel the stigma of going to school and not knowing if, you know, they can have a lunch and feeling, you know, I think it should be like a library. How about that? You go into a library, no one checks what your family's income level is. You get to borrow a book. And I think food should be the same way in our schools. I want our schools to be welcoming, and I want our schools to be inclusive. And I think a bill like this does not help that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ream. And members, we do have three bills left. I'd like to get to all three of those. So if you could be very expeditious in your comments, I can get there. Otherwise, we may have to drop one off, and I don't want to do that. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very frustrating conversation. It reminds me of when we debated paying for the lunches of people who are already eating during the last term, which is what this program does. Whenever you see things getting reduced to these really snappy talking points that can be put on a bumper sticker and become the subject of door knocking, you know you're dealing with something that's primarily political. You mentioned this is a finance committee. Representative Bakeberg mentions the actual impact upon school districts that this program has had. Let's deal with the reality. Let's deal with the reality of what's happening. $200 million was budgeted for this program. They actually spent $267 in the first year. The impact at the school level is quality of food has decreased. Kids are taking food and throwing it in the garbage. Food waste has become a well-known and well-communicated problem. And you've got these budgets on the bottom line that have not been spent that can't be spent on anything else. This is, we're facing a $6 billion deficit as we're looking at having to make hard decisions, which everybody in this room acknowledges. This is a very smart, obvious solution to the problem. And everybody seems to have forgotten in this conversation that we're talking about households that earn at least $150,000 per year. Okay? If you can't feed your kid lunch on that income, there's a more fundamental problem here. We are not taking food away from kids. We are reallocating funds that never needed to be spent on households that can already provide for their own children and applying them to the classroom where they are desperately needed. I hope this conversation gets more serious.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I want to say thanks for bringing this bill. I kind of want to say just, you know, I appreciate you bringing your concerns because I worked in years prior to this as a youth worker, contracted by several different school districts throughout the state, and particularly SPPS and NPS. I'm a mom of a kindergarten SPPS, and as an elected official who was in support of this and continues to be support of the bill that passed for our kids, every one of them, to be able to have lunch and breakfast, I walk in and take my kid to school every day, and the number one thing coming from teachers and administration and parents that are walking alongside me, giving their kids to make sure that they're safe and into attendance, to say thank you for feeding our kids. They're not being discriminated on whether their parents' salary can't. They're not being discriminated on whether their families can't. They're just celebrating a meal in good faith. Just this week, the U.S. Department of Agriculture canceled half of the food shelves ordered from Minnesota farmers, which means that our food scare is going to be insane when we have 78 truckloads so far requested from 2025 only being addressed to have at a federal level being able to accommodate 39 of those food trucks. That means families. Not just in St. Paul and Minneapolis or the outsiding reservation districts that have contracted me to be a cultural artist in residency to educate their kids, but that means all Minnesotans are going to be affected by this. And so when we talk about limiting the access for all kids, regardless of what the salary the parents are going to make, that's going to affect every family. That's going to affect the farmers that are providing these school meals for the kids that may not have family members with a high salary rate. So I can't be in supportive of giving thanks for this bill, because that would be going back to my constituents. I'd be going back to those school districts that are in support and those teachers and those lunchroom teachers in memory of Philando Castile, who fed any kid, regardless if they're a St. Paul kid or not, because kids need to eat. And parents need to be comfortable while they're working to accommodate in an economy of infiltration and the audacity. I mean, I'm shaking here because I give insulin to eat. And I take my lunch right now to eat, and I'm able to provide that. But I think about the kids that have chronic illnesses myself that rely on nutrition. And here we are valuing the nutrition rates of those children based off our salaries when the word of God in Allah is to feed and provide. When we talk about what we're in good faith here that I keep hearing from committees or on the floor when we pass this last session, is what is in good faith of a Minnesotan. And in good faith of a Minnesotan is here is to feed the loaves and the fishes. And right now, I just say I can't go moving forward because that would be going back to those parents that are parents like me, to those teachers that care about those kids and providing them their milks and their chicken and nuggets and their french fries. I want to see how we can make the meals better, how they can be nutritionally better, not taking away the meals, but providing good access to nutritional meals. That's what we should be working on here. Nothing more.
And thank you. And members, just let you know, we are going to be constraints on the clocks. I will be moving to House File 2786 after this one with the intent to get to all of them. So if you can help me with your comments, I can get to all of them, the testifiers. Representative Bonner.
Thank you. I guess I would ask people, you know, when we talk about what does a hungry kid look like? I don't know, but I can tell you that I was one of those kids. I was one of the kids with the different colored lunch ticket, the ones who lived with the shame and the embarrassment. When my dad hurt his back on the railroad, working as a carman, fourth generation, for years we could barely make ends meet. The cupboards were nearly bare. We were on that free and reduced lunch, and we barely qualified. Because my sister was diabetic, when it came time for my mom to ask if I needed money for lunch tickets, I would lie to my mother and tell her that I had some already, that I didn't need lunch tickets, because I knew my sister, who was diabetic, needed to eat. I could make do. My mom was ashamed now, years later, to find out that I lied to her. But that's the reality of what we're talking about. This does not take rocket science. Kids who are hungry can't learn. They can't focus. They can't concentrate. Any parent in this room knows this fundamental truth. This is what it is. We're not talking about luxuries. We're not talking about whatnot. We are just talking about the basics here. We're talking about feeding kids. And I'm sorry, but any proposal that proposes to change the way that equation works and feeding our kids, I don't know. And I'm not sure about the requirement that Representative Hunts had mentioned about quality going down. When I talked to the lunch ladies in my district, they told me the quality has gone up. They've been able to do more with less. We can actually feed our children for less than parents could go to the grocery store and feed their own kids because of all the agreements we have with farmers and with folks throughout our state. We can actually feed our kids better. And frankly, we can do better. I'm going to be voting no.
Representative Lee, then Senator Mira, then Chair Youakim. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, so I have 4 points. We don't have a fiscal note or a revenue note, but if you read the summary, I point members to the fourth paragraph. This bill is estimated to save about $85 million per year in state aid. I just want to note that there have been a bunch of false dichotomies or like false options offered today. I think it's really disingenuous to suggest that this proposal is going to solve any of the budget issues that our school districts have because our school system has been underinvested for the last 20 years because of other administrations that have not, that shall remain unnamed, but have not supported education. And so that's one false choice that we've talked about today. The second is that, you know, we have to prioritize which programs we want to fund over others because the other choice, right, because we are all duly elected members of the legislature for our own election certificates, we can raise revenues. And I just remind members that, right, we don't have to cut. And again, I talked about this last week. You have the power to ask leadership and the governor and say you want to raise revenues because you value education, right? We're not trying to take food away from our kids so that we can fund teachers' pensions or, you know, do other things. I just want to remind also, like, all of us members here are have that power, and the, our school districts, our community members who are concerned about an impending education funding gap, I'd encourage you to reach out to the governor and your representatives as well. That is another option, right? We don't have to cut from other programs. And let's see, what is the other, the other thing that, again, we've been given today is this false choice of paying for kids' lunch over paying for their education. It's been mentioned a couple times, but I, again, just want to add to this list of the false choices that we've been given today. Kids can't learn if they're hungry. And so, again, another false choice that you've been presented. I also just want to close again by mentioning this false choice or false, I guess, implications that just because you have a nutrition surplus doesn't mean that, you know, you don't need the money. It probably means that maybe your cafeteria workers are underpaid or not paid a living wage. I'd encourage people to look into that. In the latest DEED overview of the median wage for education workers, your cafeteria workers are some of the lowest paid professionals in your school building. And so I'd encourage people to rethink what we can do with nutrition surpluses. And finally, I just close by saying, you know, we provide every student with a desk. Why not a meal? If we're really looking for money on this scale to fund our education system, it's the answer is raising revenues. Thanks.
Representative Sensenmuir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to start out by saying, you know, Representative Bakeberg, I agree with you. I don't think that, you know, kids are going hungry today in schools because of the legislation that we passed in 2023. And I think we can all feel good about that. And that is why, you know, I cannot vote for a bill that rolls that back. Representative Myers, you know, I worked at a school that was, you know, kind of trying to engage in restorative justice practices. And when a kid was sent out of class or when a kid misbehaved, we had four questions that we were supposed to kind of run down with them, right? It was what happened, why did it happen, what were you thinking at the time, and what are you thinking now? And I learned that, like, none of those questions matter. The first question I always had to ask is, have you eaten today? Because if you have not eaten, and I would say the second question is, did you sleep last night? And learned that lots of kids stay up late playing video games. And that's a huge thing. But if you didn't get good sleep and you didn't eat breakfast this morning, then it really doesn't matter, right? You can't have metacognition. You can't have deeper thinking about what you did or why you did it. You can't be in a classroom learning if you are hungry. And that's why we passed the bill in 2023. That's why I know myself and many folks on my side of the aisle are just, this is a non-negotiable for us. We will not take food away from kids. And I just have to echo what Representative Lee said. I find it really frustrating to sit here as elected officials with election certificates with the ability to raise revenue to fund critical services like education, which I'm hearing in this committee, like we are all recognizing there are deep, deep needs within education that we should be funding. We have that ability. We can raise revenue. We can use taxes to fund those collective services. I heard you say, you know, parents in my district wanna make sure that teachers are paid a living salary. They wanna make sure that we have, you know, the right curriculum, all those things. We can do that. We can do that through taxes. Taxes are a way to do that. They are a way to care for one another, to go towards collective causes. At a time when we just got our budget, you know, targets, and we kind of learned that, you know, behind the scenes, one of the sticking points for the GOP was that you all would not raise revenue. I just really, really struggle with the false choices that are being presented today. We do not need to take food away from kids. Thank you.
Chair Youakim, close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know we have to have this discussion. We're still, like you said, trying to help our districts come out of a hole that took 20 years to dig, and we did a big chunk of it in 23-24. But more importantly, with universal meals, we made sure that all of our kids are eating. It has a direct impact on their education, a direct impact on the behavior in the classroom. And whenever you draw a line, no matter where you draw that line, there's always winners and losers. And our kids don't need to be the losers. You talk about $150,000, that's a police officer and a nurse who may be struggling to pay off school loans and pay for daycare or thinking about that third child on the way. Looking at what our nutrition staff gets paid, part of those dollars that are building up in nutrition accounts are also supposed to be meant to pay our staff. And quick Google search, Rochester, just because they were here, $13.79 an hour for a starting cook.
That's not right.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry,
then Thank you, Superintendent Paquette. I should not have picked out a school district. I should have just said the average. And then also, when you, like I said, when you draw a line, there are winners and losers, and we should not have winners or losers in our classrooms or in our lunchrooms. And we did have this bill passed separately on the floor for a reason, because it's that important to make sure our kids have what they need. And I would be remiss if I didn't say something that Representative Jordan said on the floor. We don't means test for a desk. We don't means test for a book. Why are we means testing for food when it's just as essential as those other two items to learn? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Myers, quick close, and I'll be laying the bill over.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. You know, as a parent of four kids in public school, with having a teacher that's in public school teaching, I could not sit idly by and not provide options and opportunities that are supported by so many parents, students, teachers, superintendents. You know, you guys have the job here, but this is an option. The option is continue with free breakfast for everybody. Provide that for every single family. If you make over $150,000 as a family of four, you're going to have to provide that lunch. That money saved will go back into our schools to help our kids, to retain teachers, hire teachers. I don't want to have to send my kids to a classroom where there isn't a teacher, because right now they go to a classroom with 34 kids. As a parent, it's super frustrating. We need to look at these options. We need to find pragmatic, reasonable approaches. I think a lot of you guys know me here, get in trouble maybe on my own side a little bit, trying to bring those solutions. But this is something that we need to look at, because our schools want us to look at, our parents, our teachers, our students. I thank you for listening to this, and if you have any other questions after this, feel free to reach out.
Thank you, Representative Meyer. House File, I should get the name here. House File 2201 is laid over for possible consideration in a further omnibus bill or discussion. With that, members, let's try to get through these things. We're going to go House File 2786, 1053, and then House File 51. Representative Bennett, House File 2786. And just a reminder, members, all the bills are laid over today, so we can always take discussions later. Representative Bennett. Representative Bennett moves House File 2786 in front of the committee, two-year bill, with the chair's intent to lay this over for possible inclusion or further discussion. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, House File 2786 would put tighter controls on grants and payments to nonprofit organizations. Here are the components of the bill. First, MDE would be prohibited from issuing a grant or would be required to terminate a grant if a nonprofit entity fails to maintain their tax-exempt or nonprofit status or fails to comply with their reporting requirements, including the financial filings required with the Minnesota AG's office. This bill would also prohibit payments to nonprofits whose administrative costs exceed 25% of their revenue. This percentage or less is considered highly efficient, and that seems an appropriate standard when receiving taxpayer funds. Additionally, this bill would exclude nonprofits if an employee's compensation exceeds 110% of compensation established for the governor. For your reference, that would limit nonprofit staff compensation to $164,505 based on the current recommendation for the governor's salary. And finally, MDE would be required to terminate payments if the commissioner knows or has reason to know that the recipient is the subject of an investigation of allegation or allegation of fraud, waste, or abuse. So members, in February of 2020, the IRS revoked Feeding Our Futures tax-exempt status. And that revocation was publicly posted by the IRS in May of 2020. This action was taken by the IRS because Feeding Our Future failed to meet the IRS reporting requirements for three consecutive years. However, MDE continued to approve and authorize payments to Feeding Our Future.
This is just one example of why the expectations laid out in this bill are needed. The expectations set forward in this bill are not trivial or arbitrary. They are common sense and firm expectations, and they respect our taxpayers and the tax dollars those taxpayers send us. All of these should have been expectations from the beginning. So, members, that is the bill, and I'll look forward to discussion.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Bennett, I offer the A1 amendment. Members, as we look forward to what is in front of us budget-wise, we have a tails problem. Now, one of the things that's very nice is we, in the House, have the best targets of anybody, best over the governor, best over the Senate. And this is an opportunity. We already have initiatives out there, and in fact, a letter saying that funding nonprofits directly should be discontinued. That goes back to an OLA report of 2007. And so with that, members, I offer the A1 for discussion and have I started to identify five nonprofits that we could move their next year's funding to a one-time payment and then discontinue the base. Again, this is a discussion. This committee will have these over multiple bienniums. So quick discussion on the A1. The bill will be laid over in the end. Intent of the A1 will be to be withdrawn. Any discussion? Representative Clardy, comments to the A1.
Well, that was quick. I do understand that this is a discussion, and Representative Bennett, I know we've both been teachers for a very long time, and I want you to stop and just reflect on the teachers in your school and the school district. Our priority, when I say our priority, Minnesota's state priority for recruiting teachers is expansion and looking for teachers of color to actually kind of do some reflection of the students in their classrooms. And so recruitment and retention are real key. And so this kind of leads to what I'm looking at. The programs that are up for being discontinued have a structure in them in which they recruit teachers of color, and they also have a system to have that collaboration after students graduate. So it's kind of a cohort. So looking at the proposed cuts, there are three programs that I want to explicitly look at, and one of them is Black Men Teach. I don't know about you, but in my district, and I work in a big urban district, there are not that many Black teachers. So I'm questioning why that one is even a consideration if Minnesota is really looking at diversifying their staff. The second one is, we call it TOCAT, but it's Twin Cities Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian. I'm not even sure if I've ever worked with an American Indian teacher. And I work in a very large school district. So that's another one. And then the third program that I'm questioning is SANE Foundation. And we are looking at not disenfranchising our kids and increasing student engagement. So with that, I'm kind of wondering what the criteria that you use to identify those line items. And have you met with or reached out to the organizations and kind of figured out what their successes were or why it's important that they're involved?
And Representative Clardy, just to be clear, the A1 is mine. It's not Representative Bennett, so I'll take your questions. I have listened to the testimony. This is a beginning place. We're going to have to start somewhere. We have to put items on a line, and we just have to start. The intent here, and again, this will be withdrawn, is just to put notice on nonprofits that this reality is coming. And we're probably going to have to figure out ways. My proposal here would be to hold them harmless the first year with a one-time payment, but let them start to look at how they may do in further years and get them out of the base. I mean, you have people like Mackenzie Scott and other philanthropists who are funding, and give them the opportunity to start to build that. So I'm just putting people on notice from what I've heard others say, that we need to start moving away from nonprofits, and this could be a reality here as well. Representative Clark, response.
Thank you, and thanks for the comment about putting people on notice. Well, I am having a conversation with this group that we need to, you know, be committed to having teachers of color and also being able to work with disenfranchised communities. Thank you.
Fair comments. Chair Joachim, closing comments before I go back to Chair Bennett?
Doing something with the amendment that was just to
I'm going to withdraw. So the A1 amendment, I'll withdraw the amendment and let's go back to the bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you are tight on time and still have two more bills. So I just say thank you for the conversation. A lot of what is in this bill, we did a lot of great work with the MDE's Office of Inspector General. And I think that's important that they're able to do that. You and I can take the conversation offline about lines 1.19 to 1.21 regarding total compensation. It's an interesting concept that we give a lot of state money to other places like tax expenditures, $111 million to our businesses for research and development. So wondering if we're capping those CEOs' pays too. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Bennett, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just remind members that this underlying bill here does not cut any particular nonprofit. It sets up firm standards that every nonprofit should have to comply with to get tax dollars. We are charged with taking responsible care in how we spend our tax dollars, and this is one way to do it. And by the way, I just want to put on the record, I value many of the programs that were listed in that amendment, but I also believe that every nonprofit should be held to these standards. So for the upcoming biennium, our K-12 budget is already set to appropriate at least $25 million to various nonprofits. That doesn't even include the nonprofits funded by MDE through other revenue sources, including federal funds. And if Feeding Our Future has taught us anything, it's that it's preferable to be too careful. Our track record is not good in this state on how our nonprofit payments go out, and we must put tighter controls on these things to make sure we are responsible caretakers for taxpayer funds. And as I stated earlier, these expectations are common sense. They respect our taxpayers, and they respect the tax dollars that those people send us. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. And with that, the chair lays over House File 2786 for possible further discussion or into a further omnibus bill. With that, members, House File 1053. Representative Bakeberg, as you come to the test fire stand, moves House File 1053 before the committee with the chair's intent to lay this over for possible inclusion and consideration at a further date. Representative Bakeberg, I believe you had the DE amendment, and Representative Bakeberg moves the DE amendment in front of us, and that is the author's amendment. Representative Bakeberg, would you like to speak to that briefly before we vote on it?
Yes. So the DE amendment to House File 1053, this is going to be the vehicle bill for education for the finance attendance provisions. You'll see Representative Keeler here with me, Representative Lawrence, Representative Vernig. I think I got everyone who we were part of the attendance and truancy study group this summer. So we've been working closely together on this. So this will be the finance bill. And then the DE amendment are the portions that came from education policy that have funding pieces to it. And we'll be adding one thing to it here in a minute.
Members, the DE is in front of you. Any discussion to that? That's a hot thirst. We'll take it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. And the amendment carries. And with that, you also have a second amendment, the A4 amendment. And who's going to offer the A4 amendment? Representative Green, if you would offer the A4 amendment.
Thank you, Chair. I move the A4 amendment.
Representative Green moves the A4 amendment in front of us. If you would speak briefly to that, Representative Bakeberg.
So the A4 amendment just talks about a reporting piece that we just got the fiscal note for this morning. It was my understanding this fiscal note was going to come later in the week, but it came this morning. So basically what it does, if those of us that are parents, if you think about that MCA report that you get for your child, talking about reading, math, science for the grades that take science. What this bill does is it adds an attendance indicator on that MCA report. So, Representative Keeler, anything you'd add to that?
And Representative Bakeberg, my understanding you support the amendment?
I do, yes.
Members, Representative Bakeberg supports the A4 amendment, which you have in front of you. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. With that, Representative Bakeford, to your bill as amended.
All right, so I just want to walk through the DE4 and just kind of give you a high level and what's trying to be accomplished. So there's a number of one of the conversation pieces that we had coming out of our attendance and truancy study group, there was a lot of concern about something called a 15-day drop. So basically what happens, that's a funding statute that requires school districts to drop a student when a student is not showing up for school for 15 consecutive days. We're not addressing the excused absence part of that. Frankly, it's pretty rare that a kid gets to 15 excused absences. I can talk more about it offline, but I can talk about that. But what we're really trying to do is address those kids that are frankly disappearing, the kids that fall off the face of the earth, and we have no idea where they're at. So we've, Representative Keeler and I have worked with multiple stakeholders. That conversation is going to continue. But if you look on line 2.1, that's where the DE start. I'm on the DE. But basically what it does, lines 2.1 to 2.5 tell the school district that when you get to the point of an unexcused absence for 15 days in a row, you have to notify the local welfare agency. That's the county. You do a mandated report. So you do that, but I think it's important that you understand how most schools are going to operate on a daily basis, because the assumption sometimes can be is, well, why isn't the school doing something before 15 days? And the schools are doing a ton. So you need to understand that. And I would really encourage you to ask your local districts what they do. But just to give you a perspective, every single hour, teachers take attendance. So in a middle school where I'm at and a high school, every hour, teachers are taking attendance. And that's submitted every single hour. At 10:45, in around that time, in every district that I've worked in, a phone call goes to parents and just says, hey, your kid's not here today. And then there's a cleanup time from the office staff where they're correcting, why the kid didn't show up, for whatever the reason is. Then the office staff, at the end of the day, they go through and they verify attendance daily.
And Representative Bakeberg, you're incredibly enticing, but you have some testifiers, okay.
That's right. I forgot that. Sorry.
So let's call up the two testifiers. And you already have bipartisan workings up there, so this is great. Mr. Uni and Ms. Hightower, if you could come up. And Representative Keeler, I think I'm going to have you step aside so I can get both testifiers up if I could. Ms. Hightower, since you're up there, let's go ahead and state your name for the record, and you can begin.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Ashley Hightower. I'm with Hennepin County Attorney's Office School Program. We are Minnesota's largest educational neglect and truancy program. On average, we receive around 10,000 referrals. To date, as about a minute ago, we are at 7,878. I'd like to begin by expressing the severity of the 15-day drop mandate and expressing why it needs prompt attention and change. Like Representative Bakeberg was saying, when a student is 15-day drop from enrollment, they become a habitual truant, a child in need of protection or services. And if the school does not send this mandated report to the counties, counties do not receive this information from any other source. This information is only collected by the department for per pupil funding purposes, which is housed under the MARS department. Currently, the Department of Education does not report 15-day drop students to counties or provide follow-up to ensure these students are re-enrolled. No other action is taken for these students as the schools lose funding and a student from their roster and the county is left unaware. I'd like to walk you through a quick drop example. So the student hasn't shown for 15 days straight. The school sends robocalls, depending on their staffing, reached out via phone or email. Now the school sends it to the Educational Neglect Program, Hennepin County's Be At School Program. Be At School conducts various outreaches towards the family. We can't find the student. It now becomes an open investigation, which allows our child protection to contact MDE's MARS department. The MARS department confirms that the student is currently enrolled anywhere else in Minnesota. Because our systems don't update quickly, the information given may be incorrect. It may look like the student is enrolled while in fact they're unenrolled, while in fact they're enrolled somewhere else. This can also cause child protection to unnecessarily open, thinking the child is still unenrolled somewhere else. This is Hennepin County's practice, and I know it can look different depending on which county you're at. While all this outreach is happening from the county, the student has now missed months of school. This example is only if the school has reported it to the county. If not, the student continues to be unenrolled with no follow-up. Last year, our program received 658 students from schools, flagging them as 15-day dropped or not enrolled. This year, we're currently at 613 students. I know there's more out there, but only the MARS department can give us that live total. The biggest question is, where are these students? Be It School knows students has worked with students who have been enrolled for months and sadly even years, all because our systems aren't talking together and there's no follow-up. Each student is tied to money with no urgency to address the enrollment statuses. With the new proposed bill, if the school does not submit the 15-day drop to the county, the Department of Education would then become the responsible party or mandated reporter. Having the department give families resources and sending out a letter is a good start, and the department needs to report and communicate this educational neglect to the county as well. This bill stresses the importance that if we're going to have solutions, our systems need to communicate and collaborate more effectively. Information sharing needs to be done at a quicker pace. We can't wait a month for our systems to update before we receive this information. Every day that passes is the day that that student is not in school.
And Ms. Hightower, I need you to close. I do have a hard stop, and I have one more bill. So
yeah, these students are literally falling through the cracks because of a funding policy. This is real-time work that deserves prompt attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rooney, if you can be quick.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ado Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations to the Minnesota Department of Education, and thank you for the opportunity to provide a few comments on this bill and the subject of improving attendance and addressing chronic absenteeism. As before, with my colleagues, I want to affirm MDE shares the bill author's intent that these most at-need students receive the attention they require to succeed, and we are in this for the long run. I also want to thank Representative Bakeberg and Representative Keeler for continuing to meet with us, and Representative Bakeberg for meeting with us earlier this week to talk through this bill in greater detail. I'd like to speak to the work being done as we speak by both MDE and our partners in the field. Just as a reminder, last year there was funding put forward for the pilot program for, I believe, 13 district participants. We meet with these participants on a monthly basis. These meetings demonstrate how much work being done by these 13 districts will inform best practices for the system for Minnesota students, schools, and counties, and other adults in education to keep these kids in school. We know that our state can learn a lot from these pilot programs and look forward to analyzing their findings when the program ends. As the statewide education agency, MDE is a resource hub and a support partner for districts and schools to set the groundwork to provide students more direct engagement, offer best practice and guidance around building the student adult-to-student trust, and connect districts and counties with others in the field to share what is working with similarly situated schools, counties, and organizations. When we talk about truly effective and proven methods of getting chronically absent students back in school and retaining them there, we know the work of providing students crucial one-to-one adult-to-student connections is necessary for these efforts to succeed. To that end, MDE attempting to the same outreach and contact methods that the districts and counties attempted under this bill language may not be the most effective or beneficial to the student or make them feel that adult-to-student connection they need. However, if there is a way for MDE to better act as a resource to make sure those district and county level efforts are successful, that is a conversation we're continuing to welcome to engage in. We do appreciate Representative Bakeberg's changes in the amendment that has added expectations that the LEAs and counties need to reach out to the parents in advance before any referral goes back to MDE, and a lot of that work is done in advance. However, creating a data system for reporting to MDE, maintaining the data, and then having trained staff to reach out to students around the state in a timely manner will take resources. If the proposal moves forward, we would appreciate some clarity and answering a few questions. And I can follow up with the authors there for the sake of time here. Just a few notes. After better understanding the intent in Section 1 around the adjustments for the ADM statute for unexcused absences, we do understand the intent is not to generate more ADM there. And so we have the staff looking at added definitions for that, and maybe some other statutes where that could be added. The language adopted today in A4 around the reporting on the individual student reports along with the MCA scores is one that we'd just like to make a few comments on. Just a note, since this is a finance committee, and
I'm sorry, Mr. Rooney, I'm gonna lay this over anyway, so I'll let you talk to. So Representative Bakeberg, Representative Mueller say this is a good bill. And so with that, the House File 1053 is laid over for possible inclusion into a further discussion or a omnibus bill. As amended, let me see, House File 1053 as amended is laid over for possible further discussion or omnibus bill. Representative Vernig, let's see if we can get House File 51 done. And Representative Vernig moves House File 51 with the chair's intent to lay the bill over for possible further discussion or inclusion in a later omnibus bill. And Representative Vernig, I'm sorry to do this, but can you skip your opening comments so we can get to your testifiers? Because I believe you have three.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you. I would defer my testimony to my testifiers, please.
So go ahead to the testifiers. Please state your name for the record. And if you each get about 45 seconds, and I think we can get this done.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my testimony. My name is Seth Putz, currently the Operations Maintenance Supervisor, St. Peter's School District. I've testified before in the past, well as at Lake of the Woods School District. I'm here today to give my support to House File 51. The bill will improve LTFM program by giving boards levy authority to fund roof repair and replacement. Last summer, we were made aware of seven schools that had to find an out-of-state insurer to cover them due to the state of their roofs. They, as many other schools, delayed roof repair to tackle other funding issues. This came at a significantly higher cost for the schools. Currently, most schools' LTFM costs are about 70% to 80% roof repair and replacement. With the rise in inflation and current construction costs, along with the lack of increase per pupil funding over the last 10 years, schools around Minnesota are starting to fall into disrepair. Schools are pushing back roof repair further and further because of budgeting shortfalls. I'll cut it short there.
Thank you. And to the next testifier.
Good afternoon, Chairs Krisha and Joachim and committee members. I'm Patricia Magnuson, Director of Business Services for St. Louis Park Public Schools, and I'm here to advocate for expanding LTFM funding for roofing projects. Without full funding for roof replacements through LTFM, St. Louis Park Public Schools has been forced to make short-term repairs rather than investing in long-term solutions. For example, instead of replacing roofs, which would last 30 years, we've had to make partial repairs that extend their life by only 15 years. Additionally, insurance providers have begun to raise premiums and deductibles, and in some cases, have limited coverage for older roofs, forcing difficult budget decisions that take resources away from students. The current LTFM cap makes it hard to address roofing projects comprehensively. Expanding funding for full roof replacements will help avoid expensive repairs, extend building lifespans, and maintain reasonable insurability. It also protects taxpayer investments and provides for flexibility for local school boards to meet local facility needs. Thank you for your time and consideration.
And I believe we have one more testifier. If not, Mr. Go. Mr. Go, if you could state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Evan Goff, Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for your time. I'm the superintendent of Goodhue Public Schools. I had a nice story written out, but I'm going to make this really quick. We are a poster child for this bill. We had a $28.3 million project that our voters approved in 2018 where we did a mix of renovation and new. And we had roofs that had 7 to 17 years at the time of life left, so we didn't touch them. Well, now we're at the point we're going to hit our first phase. We have two more phases to go over the next 10 years. Looking out over 10 years, we are $2 million short in LTFM. And we have a building that's in pretty good shape. The infrastructure is good. And so we really could use some help here with the roofs, and I'll help our LTFM budget out. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you want to submit your testimony to Representative Verneg, I'm sure she can send that story on to us. Love to hear it. Members, if not, Representative Verneg, I'm going to give you the opening and closing, and then we'll lay the bill over.
I'll be real brief. Our schools deserve reliable, sustainable funding to ensure safe and effective learning environments. While broader reforms will take time, House File 51 is a practical, achievable step in the right direction. I appreciate your time fitting us in such a condensed time period. And if you have any questions ever about roofs or critical infrastructure in schools, reach out.
Thank you, and I hope we get a consideration for this as we go through the talks. Chair Joachim, quick comments before I adjourn.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, for getting Representative Vernick's bill in. People came from far away.
And we have 20 seconds. Ms. Beckel, before I lay it over, could you just give us the bottom line numbers? It's 2.9 and 9.9 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Thank you. With that, we're here all week. We can do this. With that, House File 51 is laid over for possible inclusion and further consideration and an omnibus bill. And members, that concludes our agenda. We are adjourned until Thursday, April 3rd.